Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity, I'm Greg Corumbus. And Jim, our good news today is hardly the biggest surprise we've seen in politics anytime recently. Shock of all shocks, Mitt Romney is going to run for president of the United States in 2012 on the Republican ticket. At least he's going to try and win the nomination. He made a decent run at it 4 years ago. In his very brief announcement of the exploratory committee on Monday, he did it with very little fanfare, which is, I have to say, very refreshing, given all the different, you've got Trump making this grand media tour as he decides whether or not to get in. I still think he won't. Tim Pawlenty, as you mentioned in the Jolt today, had to do things with a little more flash because not too many people know who he is. Most people know who Romney is. And Romney's got some negatives. He's got the health care plan. He's from Massachusetts that he's got to deal with. The base probably isn't crazy about still the fact that he's a Mormon. And so Romney knows these things. And so he's like a laser, to steal the president's phrase, focused on the economy.
The answer is that President Obama's policies have failed. He and virtually all the people around him have never worked in the real economy. They just don't know how jobs are created in the private sector. That's where I spent my entire career. In 1985, I helped found a company. At first, we had 10 employees. Today, there are hundreds.
Jim, a lot of people say there's two general rules of being a challenger in a presidential campaign. Explain why the current guy shouldn't stay and explain why you should take his place. And if Romney can keep making the case like that on the most important issue, he's got a decent shot, I think.
Yeah, but what jumped out at me in that little bite there, Greg, was his entire career. His entire career, Greg, has been into the private sector.
Except when he's
governor is just a nickname because he ran his companies in a very governing style. It was a mass hallucination that he was governor of Massachusetts for 4 years from 2002 to 2006. There are some listeners out there who probably love Mitt Romney. There are a bunch who probably are not terribly fond of him, if my email is any sample of any, you know, representative of this. But one thing that's worth noting is that this indicates that even a guy who's got a problem on healthcare, as we all know, RomneyCare had an individual mandate, and a lot of conservatives are mad as heck about that, with good reason. The economy is still a huge, huge area of opportunity for Republicans. That, you know, we all know that when you run on hope and change, people kind of infer from that that there will be hope and things will change and that things will get better. And in the, there's really very meager areas that Obama can point to in this area. I think, you know, one of the great indicators of this is that we're supposed to be happy over 8.8% unemployment. In the Bush years, the peak did about 6%. In most circumstances, 8.8 is considered absolutely miserable, and this administration wants this considered to be good news. Also, as I've been pointing out, a large portion of the reduction we've seen from the 10.1% peak to this, you know, mildly less horrific 8.8% is about three-quarters of that comes from people leaving the workforce. People basically either retiring, going to back to school, going to become stay-at-home moms and dads, or whatever their reason, they're not looking for work anymore. And I don't really think that's the same as lowering unemployment. That's certainly not creating jobs and opportunity. And so I think this is a good drum for Romney to beat. I think he's going to be able to cite credentials in this area that are perhaps unparalleled in the field. And I think it'll be able to point out. I think it's interesting that it's not just he's not just going after Obama himself, but the team around him. And if you think Obama might look shaky heading into 2012, how'd you like to be, you know, like the economic team, everybody who ran for the door as soon as the midterms came along? This is not exactly, you know, Obama's economic record is probably going to be more vulnerable than Obama the person. And so I think Romney is sharp to try to get the debate onto that as quickly as possible.
As you said, I think there's a lot of different views, even within the Republican Party, on Mitt Romney. But at least you got to give him this. He has a reason, at least in this video, why he's running. We talked last week about the president's decision to seek re-election. And the only reason given in the video was because he won last time. So I'd like to see at least a plan of what to do in the next 4 years, even if there are some major concerns about Romney in some other areas. On to martini number two now. And Jim, this isn't the Middle East, but it's involved in the war on terror. So it finds a comfortable home, unfortunately, in martini number two. And this story is from the New York Times. So take that with a small grain of salt. But it looks like it's pretty true here. Pakistan not very happy with the United States and basically demanding that a lot of our special ops personnel be removed from the country. This all goes back to the Raymond Davis situation, the CIA officer who shot and killed a couple people claiming he was being attacked and trying to be robbed. The Pakistanis didn't like that. They detained him for 47 days. And now, obviously, there's still some very bitter feelings about this. But when you think about the success of the drone attacks and other forays into Pakistan to take out some of our primo targets, not having these guys on the ground is a major, major problem.
Indeed. And it's one of those things where, on the one hand, you recognize that the position of the Pakistani government is not a simple or easy one. Obviously, there's been questions pretty much since 9/11 of how much they can trust their own intelligence agencies. The ISA effectively always had very close ties to the Taliban, and as a result may not be terribly eager to see U.S. forces succeeding in Afghanistan. What the U.S. can and can't do on Pakistan is always going to be a extraordinarily sensitive subject with the Pakistani public. I would just kind of note, just being the partisan hacks that we are, Greg, is just to observe that, like, look, you know, the Bush administration muddled through on these complicated topics as best they could from 2001 all throughout the Bush's presidency. And we were told that a smarter, tougher diplomacy was coming down the pike, that these, you know, that the unilateralist cowboy was botching things. But once we got this, you know, citizen of the world and his great diplomatic staff around him, these problems would go away. And now we see our most vital ally in the war on terror, Pakistan. You know, relationships are now at a standstill. So there's been this very big, clear breach of trust. You know, I think I just one of those things I just kind of like the American public to kind of go forward on this is to recognize that, hey, you know what? Some of these things are hard. And the next time some Democrat comes along and says, oh, you know, this is easy, just put us in charge, we're more sensitive than they are, we're more astute, we're better diplomats than they are. No, some of these problems are just plain hard. And it's time to, you know, I mean, we've seen everything else the Democrats said between 2001 and 2008 become largely irrelevant. Some might say it's reached its expiration date, trademark. but, you know, this is one of those things where, you know, it'd be better if we were more honest with the American public and if the, you know, lawmakers could say, you know what, Pakistan is in a difficult situation. We're still figuring out who we can and can't trust over there. We're going to have to be ready for, you know, setbacks and problems in this. It's going to be a long, hard, tough slog. And you don't hear that much from lawmakers, certainly not from this administration. The attitude is traditionally everything's fine and hooray for the munificent sun god running our foreign relations.
From the very troubling and sobering to the just plain bizarre, that must mean it's time for our third martini. And Jim, we've looked at this move by the First Lady to change a lot of what's going on with the dietary guidelines in schools. Well, now a public school in the Obama's hometown of Chicago, coincidence, coincidence, called the Little Village Academy on the West Side, has now forbidden students to pack lunches from home because the principal, Elsa Carmona, says she needs to protect students from their own unhealthful food choices. And let's be honest, the parents' unhealthful food choices. So apparently Ms. Carmona believes that she knows what's better for these kids than their own parents do. And something tells me that she's not the only one who thinks this, either in the school system or in the bureaucratic world at large.
You know, a lot of my friends in the NRA like to say, you can take my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead hand. Greg, that's the way I feel about my Twinkie, okay? No food police for me. I recognize that schools act in loco parentis, that they are the authorities. And but this is kind of an example of how you know, nanny state has run amok of how health concerns have been greatly exceeded. I suppose, I guess they wouldn't have any problems if the kids had condoms in their lunchboxes or medical marijuana, would they, Greg? You know, as long as they had a doctor's note. So this is one of those circumstances where I'd like to, as a you know, parent who deals with, at this point, just daycares and preschools, I'd like to see the parents rise up over this. I'd like to see, you know, them break out the pitchforks and torches and march down to the school board and say, the hell with this. We'll see what happens. I have this terrible feeling that bit by bit you're seeing the parents get ground down by the arrogance of these school boards in this sense that, you know, look, in a lot of these places you don't have options. You know, unless you can afford to send your kids to private school, these are it. And parents who are trying to make ends meet and deal with all their other duties don't have an enormous amount of time to spend in fighting the, you know, morons who are trying to throw out, you know, home-brought lunches, et cetera. It's typically outrageous, but I think it's just an example of an increasingly arrogant mentality you're starting to see at all levels of government, local, state, and federal.
Jim, you mentioned something indirectly that is another casualty of this that I didn't even think of before, and that's the lunchbox. If you can't bring your own lunch, you won't have the lunchbox anymore. I couldn't bring my Dukes of Hazzard lunchbox that I had back in the day to school anymore because I wouldn't be able to have my own lunch.
Well, you could bring the lunchbox. It would just have to be empty. Just bring it to the table and look at it. That's all you're allowed to do.
I guess so.
Don't lick it.
It's good for show and tell. That's all now. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch. Yeah.